Hello and welcome back to the e-commerce AI, the revenue revolution. And today we are joined by a guest, Will Churland. Will brings a wealth of experience in assisting more traditional B2B companies transition to the B2C market. This is particularly through leveraging AI to efficiently manage large online product catalogs and navigate more of the intricacies of selling on platforms like Amazon. So we're going to hear Ari and Will chat about their experience. And with that, I will hand it off to you guys.
Okay, great. Thanks, Victoria. Will, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we both have been in e-commerce for a while, and especially B2B and distributors. Maybe we could start off, you could share a little bit of your history in this space. And I'm particularly interested about what you've done with Amazon as well, because I think that a lot of times people haven't worked with Amazon in the B2B world as much.
Yeah, so my story actually goes way back to 2006. Of me being a teenager, looking over my older brother's shoulder, who's 6 years older than me, and watching him import products from China and sell them on eBay. And so ever since then, my mind was just kind of wired in the buy a widget for one price and sell it for another online as kind of the main way to make money moving forward. Fast forward, I'm graduating college with an economics degree. And my family owns a 80-something-year-old manufacturing business that manufactures in the heating and ventilation space. And I started working there straight out of college and teamed up with my brother to kind of help them transition from B2B to B2C for the first time through Amazon. And that's kind of how I got my start in the whole, not just e-commerce space as a profession, but also helping out B2B and manufacturers transition too.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting because there are so many challenges going from B2B to B2C. And a lot of time the acronym D2C, direct to consumer, is used to describe that. But you've got big cultural changes, right? When you're selling direct to consumer, you have a different velocity of sales rather than infrequent large bulk sales. You've got, you know, very frequent small sales. There are expectations on the customer support side as well. And all of these things, when you move to an online experience, can be automated to a certain extent. The customer support, the ability to manage the individual transaction, and so forth. What have you seen in HVAC and in the eBay China world and so forth as being some of the challenges in that space?
Yeah, I guess first and foremost, it was just me coming in with such an immature mindset where I assumed that a company that manufactured products just had a warehouse full of those products ready to ship at any time, let alone knowing that they had to have a purchase order come in for them to then put it on the manufacturing schedule and then making sure you have all the components involved, and that it's not as easy as just making the numbers go up and to the right, and that there's a lot of little human problems that are you have to solve in between there to make sure that you scale properly and you don't make sure everyone's upset along the way.
Yeah. So in the when you're working with Amazon, how do you coordinate with Amazon and have them as a front end for doing these transactions?
Yeah, so it's first and foremost, it's going through, say, a manufacturer or distributor's catalog and deciding which of these products are actually helpful to the end customer and could be more of a kind of B2C type product. There might be, of the 10,000 SKUs, there might be 2,000 of them that you need like a registered professional to install them. And so like right then, we'll kind of just cross those off the list, and maybe it's not a good sign to sell those, or any product that's, say, over like $1,000, $2,000 price point. Like that's not something that someone's going to one-click checkout most likely. And so it's kind of narrowing down the catalog to what's an actual kind of consumer product that customers may actually one-click checkout and want to buy. And then from there, it's kind of working backwards to, okay, not only do we want to sell this product, but how much do we think we're going to sell this product, and our, what's the velocity going to be? So using third-party software to see what estimated sales is. and then getting it into their manufacturing schedule. And the place where they really tend to struggle the most is the idea of selling these products on consignment. And so not just knowing that, hey, I'm going to manufacture 200 of this widgets and I already have a purchase order waiting for those $200 of widgets. So that money is as good as gold. It's more, I have to send in those 200 units into Amazon's warehouse. As each individual one sells, then I will get paid for those individual units. And so it's a little bit more of a leap of faith, where in the modern age, it's not that big of a deal to manufacture a run and then hope sales come in through. But for a lot of these kind of traditional companies, that's totally against their way they normally do business and seems a lot riskier, especially if you add in advertising too.
Yeah, yeah. No, it certainly is a lot riskier, right? And you have thinner margins because you're paying Amazon an individual transaction rather than doing a single bulk transaction. And you have to figure out how you're going to charge for shipping if that is relevant. It's totally different. So one of the big deals that we did several years ago, but it was transformative, was with Caterpillar. And Caterpillar's aftermarkets team, who was selling everything from spark plugs and oil filters to whole engines for tractors, had several big challenges. One of them was they had no idea where their customers were. They had only sold to distributors, and then the distributor sold to the end customer. So they didn't have a direct relationship with the end customer. And they might sell a tractor in Detroit and it's actually been torn apart and now it's an engine running an oil pump in Brazil. And how do you market, you know, your spark plugs to some guy down in Brazil using your tractor as a oil pump when you think that it's in Detroit plowing fields or something like that, right? And then in addition to that, because Caterpillar was always working through distributors, their brand, and this was a subsidiary of Caterpillar called Perkins that had this problem in particular, was being diluted because these tractor parts, for instance, were being private labeled and put into different components. So when we helped them move from B2B to a D2C model, we were able to help them improve their brand recognition, build direct relationships with their customers, increase their margins by getting rid of the middleman, and to just grow top line revenue, because rather than customers buying generic spark plugs, for example, they would realize the virtues of a genuine Caterpillar part and buy it directly from Caterpillar. Have you seen any similar or additional values in going to the D2C model?
Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of like the innovator's dilemma, which is traditionally in these kind of more mature businesses, it tends not to be as much of an issue. But like you're saying, when they can only, they're only going to be able to capture a small amount of revenue to start, like with those third-party parts, and that it's going to slowly become a bigger business, it seems like it's almost not worth their time at some times. And so an example I can give you is, I was talking to someone at Toro, the tractor, lawnmower type company, and they have a division that does the sprinkler heads and high-end golf courses. And so they have distributors and installers who get paid, say, $2 to $6 million in these big B2B deals to install all these sprinkler heads, set them up on the right timer, make sure that it's all the computers are set up correctly and such. But there's also this $3 to $4 million a year market of just replacement heads for the sprinklers, that people just run them over and break them and that type of thing. And Toro was looking for a way to, how do we sell these direct to the customer? And can we find some sort of agency to help us? Because our installers are just want to do multi-million dollar deals. They don't want to ship ones and twos of these little sprinkler heads out the door. But at the same time, us as Toro, we don't want to keep track of ones and twos and ship them out the door here and there. But it's also this multi-million dollar opportunity if someone would just help this kind of B2B company create a B2C arm.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you have these platforms like Amazon, for instance, even an individual entrepreneur could establish that relationship with Toro and take the risk of buying some inventory to put it inside of Amazon and make a real business out of that.
Well, yeah, and I'd even almost put the words risk in like quotation marks. Because it's like...
Yeah, someone's going to buy that sprinkler head, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like the golf courses have them. There's millions of them out there kind of thing. Someone's going to get them at some point. But yeah, just someone doesn't want to set up the infrastructure of buying a warehouse, downloading some sort of software to help them with inventory management, help them with state taxes and Nexus, help them with all these little things that like someone like Amazon already has the infrastructure for, and it's all like one click, set it and forget it type thing.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's interesting because it makes me think of cash flow. So you've got to make an investment in order to load that inventory beforehand, and then you replenish your cash after the fact. And we recently had a podcast actually where we were speaking about the cash flow trough in SaaS, the SaaS business model, where your customer acquisition costs for marketing and sales commissions and so forth all occur before you make the sale, and then your revenue is deferred over a long period of time because it's a subscription. So even though you have solid long-term revenue and recurring revenue, you have this trough. And the same thing if you make an investment in building a presence in Amazon, for example, or any website, you have this upfront inventory and other marketing costs. As soon as you said the word Toro, somehow a red background and white letters just hit in my head. They made a big investment in the branding, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it sticks and so forth. So that ability to make that investment and then the entrepreneurial courage to and also the know-how to take it online, especially in a place like Amazon or on a private website, is huge. Now, shifting into AI a little bit, obviously the analytics, the automated generative capabilities that can create anything from product descriptions to advertisings and populate databases with knowledge and information and so forth are all in there. Are you seeing and have you been using any AI tools on the B2B and D2C side?
Yeah, it's been extremely helpful with some sorts of like copywriting that we have to do, where we might have a catalog from a customer that has 10,000 different lug nuts. And for just like an average employee, they'll drive themselves crazy if they have to write 5 bullet points describing each individual lug nut, and then up to 500 character description describing a lug nut in a keyword optimized way that also helps the customer and is also optimized for Amazon's algorithm. That will just like, that job literally used to take us months. And now it's something where we can not only have AI help us with the copywriting, but then just do subtle adjustments here and there as we need to. And just these very large B2B and distributor catalogs are kind of perfect for something like AI, especially not with like Amazon so much because the search hasn't really got into it, but say even for like a standalone e-commerce website, if you said, hey, I have a water softener and I need a valve that's at a 1/4-inch opening, that something like AI could actually take all those words and look through this giant catalog of SKUs and actually present you with the right product is something that only the big guys used to be able to do. And now it's more and more something that anyone can train their own GPT model.
Yeah, it's totally the case, right? Only the big guys, even 3 years ago, would have the money and machines and team to really do something interesting with AI. And even then, it was basic research. And in the past couple of years, maybe not led by OpenAI, but I think that they're probably, arguably the most important company in the space. We've suddenly got a platform with an API that is very usable from a developer perspective that allows you to create AI-based applications without having a huge R&D team that is doing the, creating the language models and so forth. And Hugging Face and some of these other guys have been able to curate all of the different models and metrics that have been created recently and make it easy to plug these things together in really a pipeline style fashion as rather than as a hardcore, programmatic model, and create real solutions. Bridgeline with HawkSearch, we've really been doing an awful lot in this space. And to the description that you just made with being able to annotate and create descriptions and keywords for products, we've seen customers that have had millions and millions of marketing brochures that have very valuable information in them, and PDFs with internal specifications for parts and so on. But their product catalog that was online was basically unsearchable because the products themselves were not annotated with correct information or complete information. And using large language models, we were able to mine these, millions, tens of millions of documents, learn all of the important keywords, descriptors, configurations for each product, and then automatically annotate the product catalog with that information so that both the online searches are able to find a proper product, but also their own internal product information management system, their PIM, was refreshed with correct information, identified incorrect information, added incomplete information so that the internal teams even have better information, all thanks to these LLMs that are now, readily available.
And we have all the time where these companies come to us with these very large catalogs asking us kind of what product should they sell first on, like, say, Amazon. And Amazon's shipping and fulfillment is based on different sizing tiers. And then it's also based on the retail price that a customer pays. And then it's also based on the weight of the product. And so again, if we could be able to type into an LLM saying, hey, anything that's under this sizing tier that has this retail price, that has this weight of your whole entire catalog, please let us know what those products are, and we're going to be selling those ones first because they're going to have the least amount of fees and the most amount of profit. And we can kind of figure out some sort of way to do that with some Excel spreadsheets and kind of figure it out, but it would be so much less clunky if we could just type in a command.
Yeah, that's a great example, right? And especially these distributors that have tens of millions of products, they don't even know some of them, and they've got legacy products that are very important, but they're 50 years old, and none of the people know anything about those products anymore. Just the end consumer that needs to fix some part of their machine or something is going to order it. Yeah, that's really amazing.
And then taking it one step further, of that obscure part from 40 years ago that they had to buy for their machine, then how do you get that back into the database and market back to them all the other obscure parts, because they're the only other customer who ever buy that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was another part of the analysis that we've been doing for some of our distributors that we've brought online, is helping them understand their own customer bases. And we're using AI to be able to basically review their transaction history so that they can find patterns. Okay, people that buy this part often also buy this part, and then that feeds into our recommendation engine for their website so that they can make recommendations on the checkout screen.
Yeah, no, it gives me almost a Salesforce for D2C vibe of you kind of have this like set customer base, and you kind of know when they're going to be running out of their product or when they're coming to the end of the subscription, and how can you sell them more products, and how can you integrate all that information plus the CRM together to have like the perfect customer database.
I feel like there are several B2B markets, right? B2B is huge. It's hard to really talk about that as a market, but you've got very niche, small sub markets. We've been focused on B2B residential electrical distributors, residential plumbing, these niches. And I think that there are some of them that are just really gold mines where their customers are turning over from an age perspective, where their customers that were 60 years old now are starting to retire and being replaced by a bunch of 28-year-olds who are not going to send in a fax and make a phone call in order to make an order are going to expect to go right to Amazon, where they buy everything else in their entire universe, and just pick up the parts. And those niche markets for in terms of launching a business that can help people get online, there's probably several of those that you could just really quickly sign up as customers, add a ton of value, and do something new.
And I think that the key here is that these companies and distributors have created so much value at the beginning that adding and sprinkling a little bit of AI on to their business model to keep them like relevant for the 21st century is actually fairly straightforward. Where I saw a like venture-backed startup that was raising money recently to compete with Uline. And I just thought, man, I would way rather just put a little bit of tech into Uline, who already has hundreds of thousands of SKUs of every box, a warehouse in every state. They've already put all the expenditures up. They already have it cash flowing at this point because they've been around long enough. It's like, man, the little bit of AI there, they're just going to kill it, opposed to someone else is trying to use AI and build the infrastructure from scratch. Like, that's never going to work. That means Uline's going to have to be asleep at the wheel for decades until they're going to be able to get to where they want to be. And so, yeah, these people who have this great moat of a good cash flow, good inventory, good SKUs, it's really going to be that much easier for them just to kind of sprinkle a little bit of AI into the systems to make it more efficient than someone trying to start from scratch and try to compete with them.
That's a really great point. You know, in the older days, we would have to think in terms of, okay, I've got to take out Uline and I've got to make all these big investments. But now we can say, I'm going to partner with Uline. I'm going to be a layer above and beyond everything that they do. And I'll be able to create this information set by analyzing all their data and so forth that has tremendous value in and of itself, maybe even becomes more valuable than Uline even. And I never had to open a warehouse and deal with, you know, God knows what.
Buy $1 billion worth of cardboard.
Yeah, right? Like, and that's, you know what? That's a different skill set. God bless them. The cardboard management guy, thumbs up. Not my job. Don't want it. I'll do the online part and start moving cardboard for them.
But yeah, I just think of, if you may have seen or your listeners may have seen just a Uline catalog. It's just like an AI, like treasure trove of data, since they're as thick as a phone book.
Yeah. We're going to have a camera sitting there as you just kind of flip through the pages and just ingest it all and then digitize everything, because probably they still do a lot of stuff with paper even.
Oh, yeah. The main sales point of the startup was that you don't have to go through the grid and see 4X by 10X and then see the quantity, because their software will handle it. And I go, man, that seems like something Uline could figure out with this day and age.
What are some industries that you think might have low-hanging fruit to execute on a business model like this?
So, yeah, I like to go as unsexy as possible. And I love it whenever the category requires like five different sentences to describe even what it is. And so one that seems like an obvious one with like a bunch of distributors and bunch of different parts that everyone always goes to is something like auto parts. But it seems like there's a million people in that category, and I'd way rather go after like high-end yacht parts or private jet parts, you know, and something like that, and go into kind of become a category where I'm the tallest kindergartner, where the category is not as big, but I'm the biggest fish in the pond type of thing. And so something like that has always been interesting to me. And then also I think where there's a big room for AI and supply chain and figuring all that stuff out, I'm not as educated in this. I'm just barely dabbling in this type of stuff, but just anything like the Defense Department. There's all sorts of different product, defense contractors and that type of thing, where it seems like AI would do a really good job of figuring out all the different bases and who needs toilet paper where and like all of that type of stuff, right? Where it just normally is done with pen and pencil, and you'd really be able to outcompete some of these companies being kind of putting some new fresh technology into these companies that might have been selling toilet paper for the last two decades with no changes.
You know, it's a great point, right? The less sexy spaces and the places where you can be the king have huge opportunity. The best toilet paper salesman for the military probably earns huge commissions, right? Yeah. Now, another thing that I always think through is the length of sales cycles and the complexity of sales cycles, and try to have places where there aren't too many decision makers. And sometimes in that instance, what happens is that if you're selling into, I've always preferred selling B2B, honestly. But if you're selling into smaller companies or individuals where you don't have multiple layers in decision making, that can simplify things as well. So that might not be the military, but man, I would love to be the number one toilet paper sales guy there.
Back to the military thing, again, it's finding those niches make riches type of thing, where you find out that there's only one person bidding for that toilet paper contract, right? And like, you gotta go a little bit deeper type of thing. But yeah, I think anything where I've always looked into like fly fishing, equestrian, anything with these kind of high ticket items that when you think about their normal customer base, it also is like an aging customer base that probably has all these kind of legacy companies that are just kind of been using their name to get along for X amount of years, mm-hmm. and that they need to kind of take it to that next level, and that they need the kind of the next generation to come in, with my bias. But anything like that, where that's why I mentioned the private jets earlier, I like going after these kind of more higher ticket clientele, where it's like, I don't want to get into selling B2B software for people who sell jelly beans.
Right. Yeah. You know, I almost hate to give away these ideas, because I, as an entrepreneur, want to like gobble them all up. But it is the case that, first of all, developing solutions with large language models and vector databases and generative AI does not require a huge development team. There are tons of legacy markets that have been set in their ways that will be very difficult to replace those companies like Uline, but that you could layer on top of, become the sales arm, and blow it out of the water with that information, add value to them, add value to their customers, add value to yourself. And you don't even have to be exclusive, right? I mean, you might end up with a platform that, you know, works great for somebody in the defense area and also sells, you know, whatever else, pencils to the K-12 sector.
100%, or even just something as simple as like going from Uline to like a stationery company next. And it's like, okay, everything models over exactly the same. It's got two dimensions. You got kind of the same kind of SKUs, everything. Like, you've seen what we can do for them. Let's see what we can do for the next person, and kind of just going after these little widgets here and there. But I'm with you that it seems like just putting this layer on top of it, there's going to be, unfortunately, a million AI consultants who are going to be coming into all these different mom and pop companies and trying to teach them how to do all these new things. But yeah, it really is going to come down to kind of just doing the simple stuff right, and just asking the companies, if you did have a million people on staff, what would you do differently? And then having AI do those tasks for them type of thing.
Yeah. And coming back to the D2C route, these industries that are just culturally not going to be able to make the turn, or it'll take them forever to sell direct to consumer, to be able to mine their repository, present it directly to a consumer, partner with a platform like Amazon also to have an even bigger audience, take some risk from an inventory side, which can be financed with equity or debt, and launch businesses. That's something that anyone who's entrepreneurial minded should be taking a look at. You can be disruptive in those spaces, take out the middleman, sell direct to consumer. You can be more informative with the with AI analysis, and I think that it's ripe for entrepreneurs.
It more and more as you talk, it just reminds me of my family's manufacturing business, and that in the office portion of it, the majority of the employees were doing some sort of customer or technical support. And the main kind of benefit and value that the technical support person at the company could provide over someone just Googling and looking themselves is that they just know where all the documents are saved. And they can just find that information that much faster, because they've been going through that folder system for decades type of thing. And that if you could just present that all in a very easy to look or searchable database through some sort of LLM, then unfortunately, but fortunately, it's that much easier for the customer just to help themselves.
Right. Well, we had another customer actually of ours who had a huge amount of product information as internal documents. And they considered that information to be proprietary to the company. They did not want it online. And they had been, they had a team in Vietnam that was scanning those documents, and they'd been at it for years, and then coding through that information and adding notes to their to the products. And then we were able to take all of those scans, feed them into a language model, and automate that whole thing. And unfortunately, we probably put 100 Vietnamese people out of business, but we took care of the whole thing in a couple of afternoons, I think, that they'd been working on for a better part of a decade. But that proprietary information in that instance still remained in-house, but it annotated the products so that the company's support team could find related products better, so that someone called up and said, hey, this part's not working well here, you need to add this thing to it or whatever. That actually, even on the online catalog, was able to update keywords so that people could find products better. So that's really interesting that you've got these internal docs and even external docs and support teams that, you know, these manufacturers, that's where a lot of their money is going, is managing a support organization, which is critical, but can also become automated to a certain extent with these knowledge bases.
Exactly. And it rarely seems like almost like a revenue driving activity or a value adding drive. It's almost something you kind of have to do. And so how can you use AI and turn it into something where it actually is something that, not that you have to do, but you kind of almost get to do.
Mm-hmm. So are you focused primarily with other businesses, or are you helping your brother in the HVAC business as well, or is he kind of on his own?
So he's 100% on his own for the last 7 or so years. So he still runs that to this day. They have a few warehouses, a couple million SKUs, distributing all sorts of different products on Amazon as a vendor. And in the meantime, what I've been up to is I've been running a consulting agency where we run brands and manufacturers' Amazon accounts for them. And that our kind of special sauce is that we do work with a lot of distributors and manufacturers who it is their first time dipping the toe in the kind of B2C realm, and they haven't gone through that entire process before. And so having not only the cultural knowledge of how to like work with these companies to help them with it, the technical knowledge of knowing how Amazon works and how to put their company within it, but then kind of combining the Amazon jargon with their industry jargon to find kind of like a middle ground as a translator so that they know exactly what everything is going on in the background. They're not left in the dark, but at the same time, I'm not using all this different Amazon words or different internet marketing words, and I'm using words that are they're used to using on their day-to-day basis.
I love that description of as a translator, because I think that a lot of these businesses, which are very successful, but you know, they've been doing it in a certain way for a long time. They need a translator, and they need to, you know, someone that can just look at things fresh. They're smart, but they're also, you know, they've been doing something for a long time, and they get into patterns that need to be just, you know, revisited from scratch.
Yeah, we always say a lot of the companies we work with are like the Lamborghini of their category or their niche, but they just, for some reason or another, they've been so focused on their specific category, they just haven't had time to focus on online or Amazon or e-commerce. And especially since the pandemic, with a lot of kind of brick and mortar stores closing down or specialty retailers and that type of thing, a lot of them have thought about going to Amazon or going direct for the very first time. And so, yeah, it's really helping them get through that process of, hey, it's kind of a whole new world out here. I want you to actually focus on what you're best at, which is creating your great product, making customers happy, and making sure it's the right price. Let me figure out that last like 1% of your business, if that's Amazon, and then we'll have hopefully outsized returns, and it's hopefully 10% of your total revenue.
Yeah, it's a great example, right? Lamborghini probably would have stuck with just straight up gasoline engines if some guy from, you know, PayPal hadn't like shown up and started to show how fast cars are if they're electric.
No, exactly.
And, you know, before we wrap up, I'm curious, like, what does a typical engagement look like for you with a distributor or whomever that needs to make this transition?
Yeah, so first and foremost, it starts with just figuring out what business model for this company works best within Amazon. You can sell directly to Amazon or you can sell on Amazon. And then you can also store your inventory at Amazon's warehouse or ship each individual order to Amazon. So it's figuring out what business model works best within Amazon. Then it's getting their account set up, making sure that they have brand registry rights, they have the correct UPC codes to their products and such, getting their catalog organized. Then it's doing keyword research and kind of the typical SEO and making sure that their products are keyword optimized for Amazon's algorithm. It's then we do surveys with Amazon customers, asking them questions like, what would you search to find this product? What would you tell your friend this product's called? Do you know what comes included with this product? Do you know how to install this product? So we get a good idea of kind of what the generic layman customer is thinking about, because they're so used to selling to experts and distributors and people who actually know what the product is. How do we sell to that kind of customer who is maybe the Joe handyman? So we're asking those questions through the survey process. Once we're done with the research, we have a good idea of all the different keyword combinations customers may be searching to find the product and how to show up for as many searches as possible. But at the same time, they convert into a paid customer since we've asked all the questions that they might subconsciously be apprehensive about before clicking buy now or add to cart through the survey process. Once that's done, implement it throughout their catalog. Make sure all their listings are beautiful, merchandised, optimized. And once everything is running smoothly, all their catalog is offered for sale on Amazon, everything looks beautiful, then we can get into like the advertising side of things, see if they want to advertise on Amazon, do monthly reporting for them, day-to-day case management as things come up, inventory management, and essentially everything besides physically shipping and touching their product.
Wow, that is awesome. That is awesome. Like a lot of those details, as you said them, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. But if I was taking a company to market, I would have skipped some of those steps. And then all of a sudden I find out I've got a product and it's not selling and I can't understand why everybody needs this and nobody's buying it because I didn't think about the keywords. I didn't create an image that was going to be attractive. I didn't realize that in order for someone to buy it, they need to know that such and such is included or something else. That analysis is critical. So, I'll bet you there's a lot of companies that didn't follow all those steps, went to Amazon, and now have given up on it, wasted $500,000 trying to go to Amazon. My customers don't buy there. And it's just because they didn't think it through right.
Well, and we've honestly heard the opposite too, where they go, hey, I put one photo up of my product, and I wrote one bullet point. And of my 10 different products I'm offering, I'm already doing $100,000 a month in sales. If you actually did our whole entire catalog and you did it right, oh man, this could be crazy. And so sometimes it's even them kind of just testing it out themselves. They see there's some sort of traction. They go, wow, okay, I'm at a point where I don't want to mess this up moving forward. We got lucky that we didn't mess it up the first time. Let's have a professional handle it.
That is awesome. That's great. I want to be that guy that like just stumbles onto the right bullet point and makes $100,000 a month.
Oh yeah. No, for sure.
And then I'll be calling you up and ask you how to put the second product on.
Yeah, I will say I'll get you to the next level for sure.
Okay, cool. Great. Well, hey, Will, let's wrap it up right there. I'm like excited. I'm going to like go and start a second company now.
I don't want to, put the brakes on too quick, but I know we went a little bit over, but Will, thank you so much. There was so much good information you shared, and it's such a unique business model you've created. And I love that both of you really touched on how AI is changing the landscape so rapidly for these B2B companies. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. And Will, do you want to share if anyone's interested in any of the services you've mentioned? Do you want to share how they can reach out to you?
Yeah, go to goatconsulting.com, GOAT consulting.com. Will@goatconsulting.com is my email if you have any questions about Amazon. I have a bunch of stuff that's trapped in my brain that would take you 10 hours to Google and take me 10 seconds to answer. So don't waste your own time.
I love it. That's phenomenal. That's a great pitch. All right, you two. Well, thank you for everyone that joined, and we will see you again soon.
Thank you.